You're listening to the fourth episode of the Star Wars Report. Hello, everyone, and welcome. Welcome back to the Star Wars Report. This is indeed the fourth episode. We're just trucking along, guys. We haven't given up yet, although this particular episode, we have had some technical difficulties getting this thing off the ground, but never
again.
We're still in business. We're still here. We're in three separate states. Of course, I'm Riley. I'm hanging out here in Atlanta, Georgia. And of course, we have Bethany as well.
Hello, everyone. I'm still here in Tennessee.
Yep, representing. And of course, Mark Hurlman, our third wheel.
Your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them. Listen to your ears. Hey, right out of Oregon, clapping.
Yeah, and you're not the only one. Not the only one. We've got a very special episode for you guys this week. We have Mr. Alan Quick, the commanding officer of the 501st Region in the Cloud City Garrison. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, lady and gentlemen. How's that?
Hopefully there's a few ladies listening to the show. I don't know. If they are, they should send us an email. And that way we can do that. But we've got a couple announcements that we'll get out of the way before we get off into an interview. And we'll be talking to Alan about all things 501st. What is the 501st? And all that good stuff. But first, we've got some really cool future plans coming up. Later in July here, we don't have all the details yet, but we want to go ahead and get the news out. We have a live interview that we're doing with Steven Stanton alongside with the guys over at the Sarlacc Pit podcast. And we're going to be talking about this kind of unknown project of his, Death Star 1. I still don't know what this thing is, guys. So we're just curious as the rest of you are. But stay tuned for more details, and you can follow all of our social media networks and all that good stuff to stay tuned in to all that good stuff. And we have, we're not quite ready to finish making all the announcements yet, but we have a potential sponsor, guys. One thing that we're trying to do with this episode is not run into the constant technical difficulties. If you listened into the last episode where it was just me, we tried to record so many times and failed. And even this episode is very much cobbled together last minute. So we have a potential sponsor that's going to be coming up. So stay tuned for more information. I know you guys are just going to be just as excited about this as we are, because it only means a better show for the listeners, and you guys hopefully reach out and support sponsor for rewarding us. So we're still working through all the details, but we'll give the official announcement next episode.
Oh, yes.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, shall we go ahead and get straight into this interview?
Sure thing.
I'll let you kick us off, Mark, because you did a video interview with Alan, and unfortunately much of it was lost, but what is there can still be found on our Facebook page as a special video edition of the podcast. So why don't you kick us off and kind of tell the story of how you and Alan know each other, as you're both in the same parts of the country?
That's right. Alan and I met down at the Iguana Comics, a local comic book store, just recently at the Star Wars Free Comic Book Day event they had going on down there. And yeah, that first interview, man, we had a heck of a time. I had Alan into the RV, the Echo Base, if you will. Had a bunch of technical issues. We rescheduled. He was kind enough to come back. And by the time it was all said and done, we had a nice little kind of almost fender bender in the RV action. That was kind of interesting way to end our interview. And all the technical issues kind of wiped it out. And so we lost a lot of it. I mean, it was a great interview. So that's why we invited him back onto the show. And we're going to be talking about the 501st. We're going to be talking about Cloud City Garrison, Kashyyyk Base, and some Han Solo carbonite desks and all sorts of fun stuff. But without further ado, I'd like to hand it off to Alan. Alan Quick, welcome.
Thank
to
you
the
very
show.
Much. Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate you guys contacting me and Mark. It was a lot of fun to do that interview in the RV. Yes, and I'm glad we did survive that little sideswipe. That was kind of interesting. That's how we ended the interview, so it's like person must have heard us or something, because she had to get really close to see what was going on. But
I'm sure it was the Rebel Legion.
Yeah,
I know.
That's
yeah.
What it was. Well, wait a second. We had my wife, who was Princess Leia, in there. So
wait a second. Well, Alan, for the listeners, I'm sure almost everyone in the Star Wars fan community knows or should know, but kind of to give your own personal take on it, as a commanding officer of a region of the 501st, what is the 501st? What do you guys do, and what are you guys all about?
Well, the 501st Legion, it was started by Alvin Johnson in 1997. Okay, and it just started with just a couple of guys, you know, wanting to troop the special editions of the Star Wars. And from there, it just kind of virally grew from the internet into different regions of, you know, the states. You know, we had the Northwest, we had the Central, we had the East, and, you know, so we had, you know, different, you know, aspects of the growth. So from there, it just kept on growing through different areas. From there, it became what it is now, which is, you know, Stormtroopers, the bad guys, just the Imperial group, so to speak. And it's dedicated to the movie quality costumes of the villains of the Star Wars universe.
Cool. I mean, you guys do a lot, not just dressing up, but you have a huge presence in charity work, and you guys do conventions, hospital visits. I mean, as a costuming organization, I think I'm not super familiar with other communities, but it really seems like the 501st is the most organized, one of the biggest in terms of a costuming club. Why do you think that is, and how did that really come to be?
I think it's the appeal of what we stand for. You know, we all love Star Wars. You know, that's, you know, foremost of what we do in these groups. We love Star Wars. We love talking Star Wars. And the costuming and the charity aspect, all those rolled up in one. The thing is with the 501st, it is, you know, from, like I told you, from the two that pretty well started the 501st back in 1997, as of today, there are 5,338 active members in the 501st Legion.
Wow.
And,
wow.
Yeah, for costumes, there are 8,554 costumes that are, you know, part of the 501st right now. Of that,
that's
there's
amazing.
Yeah, of that, there's 2,300 stormtroopers.
And that's just active, right? I mean, that's not including people that have stopped trooping and still have their costumes somewhere in a closet.
Right, right. A lot of these folks out there are active throughout the world, and that's what amazes me about this group, and the appeal of it is it is worldwide. You know, it was listed in the Guinness Book of World Records in 2008 as the largest costuming group. So
okay.
That, to me, is just amazing to see
oh,
how...
Wow.
Yeah.
That is awesome. What is something that you enjoyed most about being part of the 501st?
You know, it's just reaching out to different people in different walks of life, you know, sharing, you know, the love and admiration of the story of Star Wars, plus being able to put on some cool armor and costumes along the way. And when you go out there and do a troop, and that's what we call it, we see the faces of different age groups and generations. You got the grandparents who love Star Wars. You got the babies, you know, like 2 years old, and that group, toddlers, loving Star Wars. You have the teenagers. You have the adults. So it appeals from every, you know, aspect of a person's life where they relate to it. So when they see that we're coming to town and they see how accurate the costumes are, they are just blown away. They just feel like they're part of a movie set.
Yeah, speaking of the costuming, we were talking about this in the first interview that was lost. How easy is it to get into the 501st? And, you know, tell us a little bit about the, what do you guys call it, when you guys all get together and you guys do the costuming with the props and you guys kit out or whatever it is. I know you guys got an actual term for those kind of parties that you guys get together and bust out a lot of armor and things like that. Can you give us like an idea of how that works for those that, you know, would like to get into the 501st?
Sure. The 501st is, what's great about that is you have, you know, parents, you have kids and stuff like that who are, you know, involved. To get into the 501st officially as a member, you have to be 18 years old and older. You have to, you know, have a heart to what you're going to be dealing with. A lot of times people contact the 501st just because they just want a cool armor or a cool costume, and then we don't see them again. Majority of times, people that join the 501st, they join it for the sole purpose of being part of a big group, being part of something bigger than themselves, you know, willing to volunteer their time and their energy and their finances to develop a costume, develop relationships to others who share the same, you know, commitment to what charities or whether it be a con, whether it be a Comic-Con that is, or just hanging out and visiting with picnics and stuff. So all of that is rolled up to why a person wants to join the 501st. They get in there, they contact a detachment, which is kind of another subgroup of the 501st that deals with a certain costume. For example, you know, being a stormtrooper, there is the 1st Imperial Detachment of Stormtroopers out there. So you go on there and you get all these networks of where to get the right costume, how it should look, and then you kind of go from there. You just can't go down to Walmart and grab a stormtrooper costume and say, hey, I want to join the 501st. It really, you have to invest in this. And then, you know, it's like I was telling you, your time as well. So when you do that, whatever costume you choose, whether it be a stormtrooper, whether it be a Sith Lord like Darth Vader, expanded universe character, Mara Jade, Knights of the Old Republic, whatever, you know, bad guy that you can think of that is covered under the Star Wars banner, you can do in costume as in the 501st Legion.
Man, so it's certainly not something that seems easy and quick to do, but something that is usually, for most guys, worth the investment. What, out of curiosity, what's your retention rate? Do the guys who join kind of, do very many people think, well, it's all, you just kind of get a cool costume out of it, and then don't really realize there's this whole other culture to it? Or do you think people usually kind of realize what they're getting into, of that this is not just about dressing up for the fun of it?
I think when people initially want to check out the 501st, wanting to join a group of folks that love Star Wars, that costume in Star Wars costumes, and get to hang out and do really cool events and troops, as I would call it. And so there's, you know, rarely you run into a person that comes in, want a cool costume, and then you don't see them again. In the 501st Legion, you can troop once, I mean, what's required, you know, troop once a year due to your schedule, but the majority of the 501st members that I know of and part of the Cloud City Garrison, they troop quite a bit throughout the whole year. So there's generally a group of us that tend to go out to every event that we can because we just love doing it.
See, I want to take a moment here and follow up with that with a personal experience. My son was 2. He was a big Commander Cody fan, and so, you know, I was looking for ways to get a hold of the 501st, and Cloud City Garrison was the local one. And I went to their forums. I joined up to, you know, be a member so I could type there. Basically, I started a thread, said, you know, hey, my son's a big fan of Commander Cody, and we were kind of wondering what we could do to get the 501st to come. And at the time, Martin Varva contacted me back. And, you know, he came after that to the next 3 birthdays that my son had. And then another 501st member came to the one after that. But he showed up as Commander Cody, and that was the thing, is it's really that easy sometimes, because like Alan says, you know, there are people that are just, they really enjoy what they're doing. And from a parent side of things, you know, having a member of the 501st come to one of my kids' birthday parties, when he saw how excited I was to see him, you know, I could tell he was excited by my excitement, you know, and then he was asking me to take pictures of him in his gear. You know, we were having a moment, just me and him, outside of the Abbey's restaurant, just geeking out with his armor as I was helping him get all ready for it, you know. And so it's really easy to kind of, you know, reach out and find these people and stuff, and you'd be surprised how willing they are to come out and do these troops, like Alan is saying.
Yeah, that's what I've always been so impressed with about the 501st, is the way you guys do that. But to kind of step back as far as Cloud City Garrison goes, How long have you been involved as the commanding officer, and how do garrisons usually interact with each other on larger scale events? Is the 501st, I guess my question would be, more kind of partisaned out where you work fairly locally, or are there very many national level things that you guys do together?
You know, when they do come up, and what's really great about the 501st Legion, it is a worldwide costuming group, and it is, you know, comprised and operated by the Star Wars fans. It's not sponsored by Lucasfilm, but Lucasfilm prefers the group, because you are right, it is very organized, it's very, you know, a Legion commanding officer, you have all these other aspects within. Oregon being in, you know, of course, our garrison, we work well with Titan, which is in Washington. And, of course, when there's something happening down in California, like the San Diego Comic-Con or the WonderCon, you know, our garrisons go down to those cons. We meet up with other garrisons, and it's almost like a big family reunion or a big family because we're a part of, you know, the 501st, so we just have all these, you know, garrisons, outposts, and whatnot. And so we come together, and it's just like, hey, it's good to see you. Hey, it's like, hey, there's Uncle Charlie, or there's, you know. And so it is like a family atmosphere, so there's not really any dividing lines when it comes to garrisons visiting from other states or vice versa. I mean, I converse with California and those down there, as well as I've talked to those garrisons in Florida. So it's really, you know, reaches out from, you know, all these different lines. Idaho is another one, that particular area, garrison. So we like to stay in contact. Plus, within the 501st, all the COs and XOs are all in the Legion Council. So whatever's happening throughout the whole world of the 501st, we pretty much know what's happening. And if there's any issues or problems, we resolve them very diplomatically. It really makes a fun experience.
That sounds really cool. It sounds like there's a lot of camaraderie in this group, a lot of fun time, and it sounds like you guys have a really great system in place as well for resolving any issues that could come up. Anyway, I don't know. You're going to wind up convincing all of us to join the 501st. I just know it.
I can see. I can feel.
Oh, goodness.
It's growing within you.
Although speaking of joining the 501st, what is the best way to find out where to go, how to build the armor, because it is all, you build this stuff all from scratch, from what I hear. What is the best starting point for a newbie who's only ever just seen the cool armor at a convention?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because you get a lot of folks, they do see us, and they are, you know, in awe, because they're just going, wow, this is like the movie. And so the first thing you have to kind of see, well, what's my budget? You know, where do I start? Do I just get a cool Stormtrooper costume, or is there other costumes I should go to? Because each one has their different, you know, where the finances are and what they can budget. Because there's soft costumes like Imperial officers. There's Tusken Raiders, which are denizens of the 501st. There's, you know, the Sith Lord, which, you know, when people invest in those costumes, just to give you a quick example, a Sith Lord, like a Darth Vader, can run in the, and this is movie accurate stuff, so they can run up to about $2,500 to about $3,500 just
wow.
for the Vader.
Wow.
The Stormtrooper starts out in kit form, and it varies within the Legion. So this is not to be sold. We don't sell our armor to the general public, because that's just a no-no. We, you know, this is within our group for the purposes of doing our events and promoting Star Wars to whatever states, areas, regions that we do. So due to the fact that we respect what George Lucas will have us to do, we kind of honor that. So we're on an honor system of doing that. So we don't sell our products to the general public just so they can mass market them. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I do have one question then. When you have armor parties, do you sell stuff to people who are trying to get armor to join? Do you teach them how to make it? Or do they buy kits and bring them and you can help them put it together?
That is what it is, Bethany. We buy kits, and then we come together in an armor party setting where people can come, they can work on their soft costumes, they can work on their ABS costumes like the Stormtrooper. We're out there to help make it the best that it can be to represent Star Wars to the public, so to speak, so that, you know, if there needs to be an adjustment, so there needs to be, like I was showing Mark, We have fans within our helmets. We have voice, you know, chips within our armor that we play music, or we can play quotes from the movie, or like mine, I actually have the static burst with every time
awesome.
I chat. Yeah, I chat, and you hear this, you know, after each time I talk, so.
Oh, yeah, I was geeking out when I was seeing his costume. I mean, and that's the one that really, I was so sad to lose, because I was like, and listen, fans, listen, he's got this and that, and oh, and look at all the wall. I was really having a geeking moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Riley.
Well, my quick follow-up question, so, like, where would be the best place to find out, you know, contact your local 501st, find where armor parties are? Is that a pretty rare thing, like a once a year, or do you guys do that pretty often? How does that usually work?
Pretty often. What we usually ask people to do, number one, is get on the 501st, you know, and that's the www.501stlegion.com. That's where you start. From the 501st, you would go and you would look at members and garrison and outposts. From there you can see, for example, Georgia, okay? What garrisons in Georgia? What garrisons in Tennessee? So you would go to the 501st Legion site, and you would look up, okay, so there's the statewide garrison for me, okay? And then you would, you know, highlight that or click on that link, that will take you to whatever garrison or outpost you're looking for.
Yeah.
Whether it be in Australia, whether it be in Germany, whether it be England. I mean, seriously, this is what's amazing about this group is there's outposts and garrisons everywhere.
You're not kidding. I actually just went to the website, 501st.com. It's 501 with an ST for people who want to go check it out. And you have right there on the home page where you can say find your local 501st, and you select country, state. It's a really cool little system. And you're right. You guys have garrisons in Africa. I mean, Europe, South America, Canada. You guys are really everywhere.
We were talking about props, and you know, you were mentioning how sometimes you'll have like a helmet guy, or you know, someone that's a stitch master, or kind of thing like that. And the internet and how your garrison commanders and stuff are all able to stay connected. Now, do you have certain specialists that are, say, like over in Louisiana, this guy, he's the one that's doing the Republic Commando helmets. This guy's awesome. You know, you can get a hold of him online, but he'll charge you so much money for his time and the materials required to make you a finished helmet and send it back. I mean, do you guys have things like that where you guys swap parts? Like one guy's making helmets and mass quantities if people supply him with the things he needs to do it and things like that. Does that work out in a larger overall atmosphere, or is it all more local?
Well, yeah, it, that is true, absolutely true. There are, you know, for example, there's local builders that help with making kits. There's soft parts of a costume that may be in, for example, Utah. So you may know somebody in California, possibly, that has a particular piece of costume that you need, and yet you do contact them within the particular garrison or the Legion. Rebel Legion is the sister group, so to speak. Uh-huh. That's the good guys. Then you would contact those locally or those throughout the state, and then there is like a for sale thread, or, you know, so people are really cool about directing a person to the right people so they don't get ripped off. And that's one thing we frown upon, is when we see somebody taking advantage, a person who really wants to be involved with the 501st, and then we say, well, I'm going to take advantage of them and charge these high prices. No, that's one thing we don't care for. We try to filter those type of folks out because we don't want that in our group. We want everyone to be able to afford and to take part in Star Wars and then to celebrate this pop culture phenomena and go out there and just create joy to the masses.
Where would you find, like, armor kits, or you're talking about people online who would point you in the direction of buying specific pieces? How would you start, say, if you want to be a stormtrooper or a scout trooper, where would you find the armor kits for that? And would you ask on the 501st website forums, perhaps?
You would ask in your local, and I mean local, meaning it could be a state garrison or outpost, you would contact a person within that garrison, okay? from there, the garrison members, you know, because there's also you're trying to see, is this person really wanting to do this Bible first thing, or this, you know, do this for charity or stuff like that, or is he out to just, you know, we are kind of selective. We're not snobs about it, but we want to make sure that we just don't have a lot of drive-by people who just will take advantage and misuse, you know, the Star Wars property, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, because that's one thing we have, and there's things in place within the 501st to, you know, look out for stuff like that. I mean, we're really a tight group where if there's something that someone is doing something illegal or going to use the armor to financially put himself up or something, we kind of don't encourage that at all. We don't like when a person just says, hey, I want armor, and then they go and charge people their own price, and then, I don't know. That's just my thing, okay? We don't charge, so to speak, admission to get our group to appear. We do, you know, we put it out there. We request if they want us to show up, like, at a birthday or at an event, we let them know that we're doing this on our time, volunteering for charity. So all proceeds, and this is what it is in Cloud City Garrison, 100% proceeds, whatever the person gets to have us appear, goes to that particular charity, which we honor. And any extra money that they would say, well, you know, here, take this for yourself, we don't do that. We actually have them write the check out to that charity, and that way they have a record. You know, the money that we invest in our costume is what we do from our jobs and what we work. You know, we put money aside, we invest in our own money into these costumes. So it's totally separate from anything that comes in through an event, through charity.
Cool. One thing I've seen, Alan, is the guy that came as Bly to my son's fifth birthday party, he was a craftsman, and the rifle that he had made, the sniper rifle he had, it had moving parts, accurate, but I guess it was so good that he was able to trade a rifle like it. He made it exactly like the one that he was showing me, and he traded it for the entire Bly costume he got. And it kind of made me realize that, you know, if you're really skilled at making things, you might be real successful in the 501st when it comes to crafting these things. Because
that's so true.
Yeah, I mean, I was just amazed. He's like, yeah, I traded this gun for the entire kit. I was like, whoa, I've got to be a way to get
in. Wow.
It is amazing. It is amazing, especially when folks are, and Mark is right, folks are so talented within this group. It just boggles my mind, especially when people are able to take a piece of plastic, ABS, and form it to, you know, the correct dimensions of the movie. And that blows my mind still.
Yeah.
And I think that's what constantly happens when the 501st make an appearance at any event, whether it be a parade or a convention or a children's hospital or a birthday party. It's always just astounding. Like watching a movie come to life, and it's always a surreal experience. I will never forget at Celebration 5 when we were down there in Orlando, seeing about 200 stormtroopers walking down one of the halls in almost in perfect formation. It was just a very surreal sight, because you didn't even see that in Star Wars films. That's kind of something you're left to imagine of what it would have been like seeing, you know, the Jedi Purge with all the stormtroopers, seeing perhaps thousands of stormtroopers at a time. Do you think you could, this question just kind of came to me, but do you think if, in the case of perhaps the upcoming live-action series or other official Lucasfilm productions, there is this amazing resource of thousands of troopers out there, do you think your relationship with Lucasfilm has been so successful in Disney and Celebration and Disney Star Wars Weekends, do you think you guys would ever be in an official Star Wars film or TV series or something like that? Is that something the organization would be opposed to? I don't know. Just kind of thinking out loud here.
Well, Riley, you're right on a lot of accounts. The Star Tours, which just opened recently down in Disneyland and Disney World, there are some 501st members that actually do cameos in their costumes, because they were requested by Lucasfilm to take part in those.
Cool.
So that is correct.
I couldn't help but kind of, if I wanted to stretch my fanboy imagination a little bit, I could just see 800 stormtroopers charging across the field somewhere in the Midwest where they set up a shooting location. And if Lucasfilm wanted to sponsor a bunch of 501st members there, I mean, the possibility, my mind's kind of going. That's kind of what I do, though.
The Final Force relationship with Lucasfilm has developed into the point where whenever there is an official Lucasfilm-sponsored event, he contacts that particular garrison within the fan relations of Lucasfilm. And then from there, we're able to gather the numbers that Lucasfilm needs for a particular event. For example, the opening of Star Tours 2.0 down in Walt Disney World. Well, they contacted the Florida garrison, and they had a parade. So you had members of the Rebel Legion, as well as the 501st, marching with George Lucas and a few dignitaries down, I believe, Main Street, wherever they were going in Tomorrowland, wherever they have that set up. I have not been down there, but I did see the video, so they did contact that garrison to help out.
That's so cool.
That is amazing.
You know, we were just talking about the technology. You were talking about the forums, and people were able to, you know, make blasters and all this stuff that's exactly like it is in the movies. And me and you were talking before in the interview that was lost, you have a carbonite desk. And by carbonite, I mean Han Solo in carbonite. And we're going to go ahead and put a link to the Cloud City Garrison forums where you can check out pictures of this. But you want to go ahead and take a moment and talk about that? And I believe you even said you guys got some people interested in looking to do another build on that and about how that works?
Absolutely. The Han Solo, there was many ideas that were revolving around what I wanted to do with the prop. You know, like you were saying earlier, there's many talented people there. They're able to develop cast, develop a kit, whatever. And so I was able to, and, you know, like I said, you know, people are wanting to say, what are you making this for? What's, you know, the ins and out of it? But so I started out in January of this year, and wanting to create something, whether it be a desk, whether it be a coffee table, whether it be like one of our other members here in our garrison actually made a coffee or a poker table. So it's that he's actually under glass as a poker table. And so very talented gentleman, you know, that created that. But the Han Solo ended up becoming a fixture on my wall. So I was thinking about a desk, but now he's like you see in Jabba's palace, kind of leaned up against the wall, as you see in the thread that I sent, or the link I sent you.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Look at that picture. That's pretty awesome.
That took about 3 months to build, and all the dimensions were taken from researched archive materials. So every little cut of this box was to what you see in the film. So it's pretty imposing.
That is an incredible wow.
So I was pretty proud of it when I finally completed it, but the only thing I don't have with it right now is the top right has a hero panel, is what it's called, which would light up, but mine does not light up, which I don't want it to, but I'm pretty pleased about how it looks. But an investment on that, when I, you know, from start to finish, and remember, I had to go out there and get the cuts with this particular machine. So I invested $1,000 into it, which is a lot of the parts, the paint, and everything else. But that was a lot of fun, and it is now waiting for somebody to pay a bounty for.
Well spent. So I got to ask the question I think everybody's begging to know. How did you get Harrison Ford's likeness? I mean, how did that work?
Oh boy. Yeah, that is Harrison Ford's likeness. It was, you know, you got these talented folks that are able to cast and kind of get the cast of how you see it. They just, like I said, it was a talented person that was able to cast Harrison Ford's likeness. And what was actually what you see in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. From there, that's, you just build around it.
So this is actually like someone took clay and carved it to look like that. Like that's somebody's eyeball that looks exactly like it. That's where I have a hard time wrapping my mind around. It's like that is some serious.
Craftsmen, yeah, the craftsmen are amazing, and that's, you just are taken back by it. It's just like the R2 builders, okay? You have these folks that build R2 units, and, you know, you see them at the conventions, the R2 builders, you see, Lucas goes and he peruses the R2 builders area at the convention, or he sees, all these different aspects of fan-made. And that's what's really great about fan-made props. You know, George Lucas smiles because he, you know, number one, it promotes his property. And number two, he knows his property is secure within the 501st that we're not out there to profit off of his license. We're actually there doing charity events and doing it for the good of Star Wars rather than going out there trying to make a buck off of these particular things. Do you see the difference there?
Yeah, wow,
the level of craftsmanship and the level of heart, I would say, that each member of the 501st that I've personally come across is phenomenal. I mean, Martin Varva, Mike, I want to say Mike's last name was like Sheriff or something like that.
No, Roseboro.
There you go. Yeah, you know exactly who I'm talking about.
Yeah, he also has a Boba Fett.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, when I first did, my very first time running into the 501st Garrison in Oregon was a droids thing. They came down for a robotics expo in Grants Pass. And Mike was there, and I think even Martin was there, but I didn't know any of these people by name, you know, and I just was getting to chat with them. And then when episode 3 came out down at Circuit City, I went down there. That was when I was in contact with Martin. And, you know, I came down there, and I don't know, Alan, you might have even been down there. I know Mike was, and it was like one of these things, like, I was there, they were there, we were all in costume, but I didn't know any of them because they're all wearing their costumes and stuff. It's amazing, you know, how you go to these events and stuff, and it's such a small world. But you don't realize it until you get into that online community. And then, you know, you start chatting with people. Oh, yeah, I was at that place. I was Boba Fett.
I have no idea how many times it's happened to people that I've talked to on Twitter, on Facebook, social networking, through our podcast, after Celebration 5, who were in the same room as or sitting two rows from me, and I didn't even know them at the time. And now I feel like I know them. It's funny how that works. But that kind of reminds me, I have to ask, Alan, Celebration 6, it's a good 14 months away, it's a long wait, but does the Cloud City Garrison have any plans? Will any of you guys be in attendance?
There are a few of our members who are already, believe it or not, motel is booked.
I've heard that. I've heard, like, it was the Rosenstein to the 501st Hotel is almost completely booked already.
It's booked, yeah, and it's you know, the excitement and the buzz is crazy within the garrison because are you going? It's like, yeah, we get that. Are you going there? And then there's others that says, well, I'm going to, you know, San Diego Comic Con. I can't make it to Celebration 6, but there's that talk. I mean, you know, my family's going to go on a vacation in October just to see the Disneyland's version of the Star Tours. Yeah, and give a report back to the garrison about how cool it is. Looking forward to that. The many conventions and the celebrations that are there, yeah, you know, Riley, what you're saying, it's like you're absolutely right. You become, you know, known throughout the 501st, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, I met some members of Cloud City Garrison. Oh, I met some from Georgia. I met some from Florida. And you get all these different garrisons that you guys, in your different ways when you travel, will come across. And you're just part of this network of this big family. I mean, look, the Star Wars Report. You guys are in the network of the Star Wars universe, so to speak, and you're promoting it, different aspects of your podcasts and your reports that you go out there and you talk about expanded universe. You talk about the convention. You talk about the 501st. You talk about costuming. It's amazing that you guys are bringing this out to us. And I want to say I appreciate it.
Oh, you're most welcome. We've been doing this. We'd be doing this without anybody listening, to be frankly honest. We love talking about all aspects of Star Wars fandom. But yeah, we love interacting with you guys, with any Star Wars fans. They're such a nice bunch of people. And I think the 501st is just a great representation of even those who aren't in costume, we all have something in common, and that is a love for a movie franchise, for a pop culture franchise, that is Star Wars. But that so doesn't describe it, because that connection really is only the beginning. And if you've been to something like a Celebration or San Diego, and I'm sure as you know, even especially in organizations like the 501st, it transcends just a couple people who like the same movie and talk about it to relationships that build and friendships that build upon that just because of this connection that we have.
And taking your love of something and doing something good for other people with it as well. You're not just a costumer, you're a costumer who helps other people.
Bethany, that's the main point. I really appreciate you mentioning that because, yeah, the charity aspect of what we do is definitely a plus, especially when we are able to help out a Make-A-Wish child, you know, where they, you know, they don't have a lot of time that, you know, because of their illness, but yet they request a Star Wars characters to come see them off to like Disneyland or to a convention or whatever. I mean, that makes it worth it. That's what I'm saying. You know, doing the things for charity makes it all worth it, plus wearing a cool costume. But, you know, seeing the smiles of a child that's going through such a traumatic experience, whether that or you go to a birthday party and all it is just excitement and joy throughout, store openings, like you were saying earlier, where you have a release of DVD, Star Wars, Clone Wars, whatever, what have you, or a comic book show or a comic book con, or, you know, for example, our group's has been involved. We just recently did an event for Mensa. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but it's the Intelligence IQ group. They invited us to take part of their annual convention, and then we raised charity for Children's Miracle Network while we were there.
Cool.
That's awesome. That's one of the best things about it. And then you also have the other side, you know, like, I'm proud to be a geek. But on the same time, when I go to places and I see members of the 501st and I realize that, you know, regular people also dig being geeks from time to time, it lets you know that, you know, you belong somewhere. And I love that. Now, I want to touch, before we let you go on this, when I was doing EUcast with Riley, he brought up this little video, a fan-made video, called Black Star Warrior. And when we were doing our interview, you had mentioned that you had a hand in making this. And it was just, for me, it was like a surreal moment here. I'm like, wait a minute, I know of this, you know, because Riley was like, hey, you got to check this out. Riley's always been a big Lando Calrissian fan. And so when that came out, I just remember, you know, oh, yeah. And so, you know, go ahead and tell the listeners exactly, you know, what your hand in Black Star Warrior was and how, you know, the project came to be.
Well, Matt Haley, who was the director, had contacted us of, you know, being part of this fan film to celebrate The Empire Strikes Back 30th anniversary, as you know that Lando was very much a part of. And so he got together with a writer, David Walker, and they came together and they created this surreal setting of Black Star Warrior, which would be what would happen, you know, if there was not a sequel to Star Wars. You know, would the marketing, or would there be an independent company being able to use that property to do that? So it's sort of like a tongue-in-cheek parody of what if they just base it off a Lando character with the, you know, kind of a 70s look to it.
Yeah.
And that kind of built on it. So Matt Haley contacted me. And I've been, you know, I was the CO last year as well, so this is my second year as commanding officer. But Matt Haley contacted me and he says, hey, I'm making this kind of a parody of our love for Star Wars in Empire Strikes Back. We're making this. Can you and a few troopers come down and, you know, help us? You know, we're not promoting this for profit. And that's another thing. See, he said the magic word. This is not for profit. So it's like,
this
well,
not
that's
the profit you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. So he said, this is for our love of Star Wars, our love for Lando and that type of movie. So, of course, our group got involved with it, and I was able to rally the troops to do it. Like, all the costume people that you see are from our garrison, our group. So all the stormtroopers that you see, the Darth Vader that you see, are from our group. Some of the other people were extras from, the Portland area, but, and the officers, of course, they were a couple of actors as well. But the rest of the characters were either part of the Cloud City Garrison, the Rebel Legion, or, another base within the nation.
Wow.
Like Jimmy is
I'm the biggest Billy D. Williams fan. And so I just absolutely love the kind of 70s take on it and the kind of cool retro look that he did. So you guys did an awesome job. But I kept expecting, Hen! There's still time to save Hen! but it's so cool to see fan films with the 501st and things of that nature. So I had a good time watching that video.
On the Han you guys had, I was just like, I was digging it. The guy did a good job.
That's Jimmy. That's Jimmy. And I'm trying to pronounce his name, and I don't want to badger it, but Jimmy, I believe he's from Ohio. And so he flew out just to do the Han Solo part for that.
Nice.
Awesome.
And Leonard Roberts flew up from L.A. because he just finished his stint with Heroes.
I thought I recognized that guy.
Yeah. So he came out there out of the love for Star Wars and to help out a friend. He came in and did the Lando part for us. And, so it was really a hoot kind of, meeting these folks and seeing how down to earth they are and seeing how things are put together. And they used these wonderful cameras to film it, and the sets were great. They had a prop master, or the person that helped make the props, actually did other props for Hollywood, and he came up and lent his. So if you look at the credits, make sure you may recognize some names who are have had their hand with helping create things in Hollywood.
Yeah, we're throwing an armor party tonight. You want to come out?
Depends what you want to build.
Yeah. Well, I remember because I've met Billy D. Williams once. My left hand has never been washed yet. No, I'm kidding. He shook his hand, but I nearly begged his manager. He was at a small sci-fi convention called AdventureCon last year here in, up in Tennessee. And I couldn't get the manager to let me even get a few minutes of an interview. But I did talk to a few Anthony Forrest and a couple other guys that were there at the time, but no Billy D. Williams. So one day, I'm going to be able to talk to the coolest guy in the galaxy.
Funny thing about Billy D. Williams, we did meet him, and my wife, who is one of the femme troopers in the Black Star Warrior, and she's on the left-hand side when you're viewing it. She's the left-hand side glam trooper is what they would call her, or femme trooper. she took her chest piece down to Anaheim, where Billy D. was doing a signing, and Billy D. Williams signed her chess piece.
Oh, awesome.
Hello, what have we here?
It's exactly right. So he kind of smiled when he saw it, but he was a good sport. He signed the inside of her chest armor. So when you see Black Star Warrior, you look at that femme trooper, that one was signed by Billy D.
I bet Billy D. probably tells that as a story of fan interaction.
Oh man! I'll tell you what, Alan. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I really feel like we've gained some insight into the 501st Legion, and hopefully our listeners have as well. Because I know one day I would love to join. It's all a matter of that time commitment and budget, but I think it's something very much worth it. And what you guys
do
is awesome.
Now I know you're leading up to the ending here, but I have to ask two more questions.
Okay,
this is way too much fun. One, I know your wife is in the 501st, right?
Yes.
How do you guys like this as a family thing? Do you have many families in the 501st? Is it a
yes.
good family thing to do?
Oh, yeah. That's what's really great about having a spouse or family or just, folks that are involved, because it is a family affair, and it is, we support each other. I mean, she does Princess Leia for the Rebel Legion, as well as the Mara Jade character for the 501st. It is a family affair, as Yoda would say to you guys, enjoying your will.
Okay, awesome. And I was wondering, how do you guys organize such, routines for events like marching in time, etc.? I know Riley and I are in the Civil Air Patrol, and as such, we do a lot of Air Force drilling. So I was curious to know who teaches you guys to drill and who organizes and choreographs routines?
You know, we work on what we want to do, especially when we do parades. We have a set way of the way we want things, you know, like we want TKs in this way, we want Vader here, we want Jedi here. So, yeah, there is a little bit of organization on how we want the group to march in a parade or how we want to come out at an event. You know, so we have a set way of, okay, Vader is flanked by stormtroopers and then flanked by Jedi, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, there is, we do organize how we are presenting ourselves when we come out to interact with the public.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Do I sense innovative drill competitions within the 501st? That would be pretty awesome.
That would be awesome.
Last one in formation, answers to Lord Vader.
Now, I want to ask. Now, you're TK-3066, correct?
Yes.
Now, what does the TK and all the other little abbreviations before the numbers mean? I know that, you know, some of them should be really simple, but they don't quite come across to those that don't know that about the 501st, or even the EU, for example. You know, so some people are left wondering, what does TK mean, and the other designations for the different troopers? What are those?
Well, the TK came from the original Star Wars, where, you know, the officer's asking, you know, hey, TK, what's your, you know, and he comes out there. So TK was something Lucas put in there, and then from there we just took that as the stormtrooper, like TK. So all stormtroopers have the TK. Biker Scouts, you know, they're TB, you know, trooper, biker, whatever you want to call it. So Biker Scouts, TB, TD is for Sand Troopers. SL, Sith Lord, DZ, Denizen. So there's many, you know, and we just incorporated all those. So if you're an officer, it's IC. So it's crazy that you come to all these abbreviations. Well, what's this stand for? Well, it's just different segments of the costuming group. Everyone is not everyone is a TK. There are many different factions. So my wife is a Sith Lord, so she's a Sith Lord. I'm a TK, so.
Nice. I see. Well,
my
cool.
goal someday is to be an RC.
yes, Mark's dream goal. Well, thank you so much, Alan. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And again, for folks, I just kind of discovered this, for folks who are interested, like myself, in joining the 501st, you can look at 501st.com, actually 501st.com, no the. But what I'd also encourage our listeners to do is to go to 501st.com/databank/trooper-survival-guide. So it looks like it was just posted within the past couple days, a new document on the bare basics of what the 501st is, how to join, how to do a costume. It looks like a great starting guide. So I know what I'm reading tonight. This is my reading schedule, so... once again, Alan, thanks so much for coming on, and hopefully we can get you on many times in the future to talk all things 501st and keep us updated with this awesome fan group.
Guys, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate that chat. It's been a blast for me.
All right.
Well, thank you for coming. It has been so much fun.
Yes, Alan, definitely. I look forward to doing many more things like this in the future.
Excellent. Well, I guess that's going to do it for this very special episode of the Star Wars Report. I think that what's that number 3, guys?
yeah, you've been doing better.
I'm getting a little bit better since the rebranding, just a little. For the Star Wars Report, I'm Riley.
And I'm Bethany.
And I'm Mark.
And of course, not to forget, Sir Alan Quick. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks again. Awesome, you guys. This has been fun. My gosh, this has been a blast. I mean, like Mark was saying, there's just so many other fun stuff, you know, to chat about. I mean, my gosh, it's like where do you stop? And, you know, you don't have enough time to go through everything.
No, I know. We do. We want you to come on many more times, Alan, as we discuss things.
Yeah, that's the thing. But you know what? I was telling Mark, at the last time, it's like, we have events, you know, all through the year. So, I mean, we're just totally booked solid. I mean, for example, we've got tomorrow, we're doing an event for the city of Springfield here in Oregon. And then after that, the day after, we're doing a video shoot for promos for Star Wars night for the minor league club that's here. If you look on our announcements, you'll see it's like some of those are public, but like the birthdays and stuff, that's in a private section, but there's seriously never a dull moment. Well, here's my question for each of you. If you can choose a costume that you'd like to do for the 501st or the Rebel Legion, what would it be? What would be your first costume that you'd like to do or, you know, eventually do?
Money aside?
Yeah, money aside. If you had the money and you wanted to do a certain costume, what would it be?
I can answer pretty easily. I would be a animated Clone Wars style trooper.
Ooh, good answer.
Oh, goodness. I've been thinking for so long in terms of what I could possibly afford. You know? I'd have to say some sort of commando, probably.
Nice.
Yeah.
Money aside, Republic Commando, hands down. But
okay, so it seems like it's all Clone Wars here.
Yeah, you are talking to some Clone Wars fans, I'm telling you.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Okay, original trilogy. From the original trilogy, what would you do?
Hands down, Fett all the way.
Okay.
Yeah. I would actually have a hard time choosing between my first. I think the easiest one would be the traditional TK, just because it's the classic.
Sure.
Classic.
Yeah, that does draw me as well.
But well, it does. It is what people see. They see Vader, TKs, and then Princess Leia, and then the rest of us. You know, it's like, you know, they. I mean, I just told Mark we have an Admiral Akbar in our group.
That's awesome.
And so. He's got an awesome way. I mean, if you go to our gallery, you know, if you guys have time in your travels and whatever, go to our gallery. You'll see, some of the newer ones, like the Akbar, for example.
Wow.
Yeah, money-wise, I figured I'd always be a scout going that direction because I was told that was the cheapest, and I like being the sniper when I play Battlefront. But
nice.
When it comes to the Rebel side, I've already got my Jedi robe, and I've got
it. True.
I've got the outfit, I just don't know how to sew. It's been sitting in a box.
See? Armor party.
Yeah, that's
there
what
you
go.
Do. I do have one final question that I wasn't sure to ask on air, because it was very technical, but in terms of 501st, are there Old Republic Jedi, Old Republic Sith, with the kind of armored look, but that also have the Jedi robe? That
yes.
That is?
Yes, 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 Riley, yes. Oh my gosh. The sky's the limit in the 501st, which is awesome. People take everything you can think of, EU, and put it in the 501st. It's amazing to me. Yeah, so everything you see from the Old Republic, Knights of the Old Republic, anything to do with expanding throughout the lines, it's there. And that's why I said, sky's the limit. When you put your imagination and you say, I want to be this character, you can be that character.
Oh, I'm telling you what, guy. I think I'm in.
Yeah, okay, I put a picture into the Skype chat. If I could be any character from the Star Wars universe and just magically have a costume or have all the skills to make one, I would be the female Mandalorian from the Deceived trailer or Satele Shan from the Hope trailer.
Vizsla, huh? Yeah.
And that's being made. See, like I said, those characters are being made. We have female Mandalorians, and we do a lot of events with the Mandalorian mercs. So, we do all kinds of stuff. So it's like Mandalorian mercs where you customize your own Mandalorian armor. You take a Fett and convert it into the female Mandalorian. Bethany, you're there.
And I recall they had something like that with both the Legacy Imperial Knights and the Tor Jedi Order with their armor plates at one of the conventions, or it could have even been C5 where they were unrolled and showed for the first time. No, it couldn't have been C5 because they were already up for that. So it must have been maybe even C4 or something like that before, where they had them come in, and that was like the first time that we'd seen them actually in costume.
I'll tell you what, the clone troopers are a little bit rarer than I'm looking at the stats on the website. There's only a good 300 or so of them.
Yeah, that's what I said. I mean, you guys are all Clone Wars fans. I mean, you'll just be adding to those numbers.
Hey! Wow. Well,
swelling the ranks.
Man, yep. I'm all excited now. But I'll tell you what, guys, I'm going to have to skedaddle out of here and get a decent night's rest over here on the East Coast.
Okay, guys.
But thanks again, Alan, for coming on, and what a great time to talk to you. It's a blast.
Thanks, Riley. It was a lot of fun.